Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Jennifer Machia, who's a professor in the Department of Communications at Texas A&M University, where she teaches courses on political communication and presidential rhetoric, an historian of American political discourse, especially discourses about citizenship, democracy, and the presidency. She's the author of Founding Fictions and the co-editor of The Rhetoric of Heroic Expectations, Establishing the Obama Presidency. And she's finishing a third book about Donald Trump's presidential campaign and demagoguery. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jennifer Machia.
Thank you for having me on your show.
And our preceding guest on today's program is an expert on nuclear weapons and the systems around the use of nuclear weapons. And he was expressing a great deal of concern that what President Trump was exhibiting at the rally on Tuesday night in Mississippi was a lack of control, because he's been advised by his aides not to complicate matters. This is a very delicate situation. The Judge Kavanaugh's fate is hanging by a thread, and they have been trying to restrain him and encouraging him to say good things about Dr. Blasey Ford, which he has done up until now. So let's begin with that. Do you think that this was an example of a person or a president who simply can't control himself because what he did was against his own interests?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think that what we saw Trump do was absolutely by design and was intended by him. But that's a separate question from whether or not his staff can control him. I don't believe that his staff can control him. In fact, I don't think that anyone can. But I do think that he intended to say what he said. I don't think that was a mistake.
So what would his motive be then?
I think that he's always trying to sow division. He's very interested in polarizing people, us versus them. I think he's probably irritated with the way that the Kavanaugh hearing has played out. It seemed like there was some pressure on the way that he had limited the FBI investigation, and that was expanded, maybe. So I think that it hasn't been playing out the way he wanted it to. And so one way to push back on all of that is to get his partisans and his rally crowd, excited about, saying this woman is a terrible, accuser of things. I don't know what his point was.
Well,
he has a bad memory.
Right, but this is what's extraordinary. There are three swing votes, as far as we can tell. The Democrats have probably got enough political cover to vote en masse against Kavanaugh. But there are three wavering Republicans, Senator Flake, Senator Murkowski, and Senator Collins. Senator Flake referred to Trump's attack on Dr. Blasey Ford as kind of appalling. There is no time and no place for remarks like that. But to discuss something this sensitive at a political rally is just not right. I wish he hadn't have done it. And then Senator Collins told reporters that Trump's attacks were just plain wrong. And Senator Murkowski said that it was wholly inappropriate, in my view, unacceptable. And when asked whether she'd vote for Kavanaugh, she said, I am taking everything into account. So I guess that's my point. I don't see the strategy of offending the very votes you need.
Yeah, that's a great point. So, on the one hand, he's impeaching for Dr. Blasey Ford's credibility, right? She's a terrible witness. She doesn't remember, right? And so that could provide cover to someone like Flake, who might want to vote against her, right, and support the Republicans. It's hard to predict exactly how things like that will play out once you say them, right? Mm-hmm. And Flake isn't exactly reliable. He will sometimes condemn Trump and then vote accordingly, right? So it's hard to know how he'll actually perform on the question. But then also, it might not have been these three people who were his audience, his target audience. When Trump is in a rally, he really enjoys the rally, right? He really enjoys rallying his supporters. And folks have been reporting in the last week that Trump is really looking ahead towards 2020. He's really looking ahead and thinking about this as, you know, his reelection campaign. And so, you know, rallying his troops has been successful for him so far.
And again, I'm speaking with Jennifer Machia, who's a professor in the Department of Communications at Texas A&M University, where she teaches courses on political communication and presidential rhetoric, an historian of American political discourse, especially discourses about citizenship, democracy, and the presidency. She's the author of Founding Fictions and the co-editor of The Rhetoric of Heroic Expectations, Establishing the Obama Presidency. And she's finishing a third book about Donald Trump's presidential campaign and demagoguery. So is there, since you have studied presidential rhetoric, Jennifer, I take it there's nothing like this, right? I mean, would you, I know that President Trump has put Andrew Jackson's portrait up on the wall to sort of highlight it in many of his photo ops. Would you have to go back to him, the sort of genocidal Indian killer?
I think that's right, actually. I have written a thing, I think it was in 2016, comparing Trump to Andrew Jackson, and I think that that is the best comparison in American history for presidents. Andrew Jackson was charming by all accounts, particularly with women. You know, he was remembered as a very charming person, and yet also he was a, I can't say the word, I don't think, your program. He was an SOB, that's the word. Mm-hmm. You know, he was very willing to get into a duel. There's a great and terrible story about him getting into a duel and being so enraged at this person that he decided to not fire his weapon, let the man shoot him, who he knew was a good duelist and a good shot, withstand the fire and then shoot back so that he could kill him, which he did. And when his second, and he left the field of honor, the battlefield, they walked over to a tavern where Andrew Jackson was said to drink some buttermilk, where his second noticed that there was blood running down his leg. And indeed, he had been shot right in the chest, and he had that bullet lodged in his body for the rest of his life, including while he lived in the White House. And the guy said, how is this possible? And he said, oh, yeah, I was determined to kill him if he shot me dead. Trump has that kind of persona, right? He has that kind of alpha male demeanor. He's not willing to stop. He's not willing to back down. You can wonder about whether that's presidential, for sure. And it's interesting because, you know, we sort of have made a hero out of our presidents since we've given them the power to destroy the world, right? You know, we sort of look to this person as they have to be the smartest person. They have to have the best disposition. They have to, you know, be able to control themselves in all these ways because they do have the power to destroy the world. And so what do you do when it's clear that we've elected a person who does not possess those qualities? It's really frightening, and I think it's got a lot of people on edge.
Well, we were just talking earlier with Joe Cirincione about comparing what happened. I mean, we're lucky that we haven't had a real crisis during the Trump these last two years. Most presidents have been faced with a crisis of one kind or another. And if you go back to the Cuban Missile Crisis, which was a real one, Kennedy was absolutely badgered by his hawks and his joint chiefs and General Curtis LeMay to strike Cuba with nuclear weapons. And, you know, fairly recently we learned that the Russian military officers in Cuba had authority to launch the nuclear weapons on their own without the Kremlin if there was going to be an attack. So had JFK listened to his generals, the world would have ended back in 1962, or the world would have been incredibly screwed up, shall we say. So compare that to what you have Trump, surrounded by hawks like John Bolton and Pompeo, the only adult in the room, Jim Mattis, the Secretary of Defense. He's on his way out, probably won't be there after the November 6th elections. The difference is that Kennedy was able to be sober and not be swayed by his hawks. Trump is probably going to get goaded by his hawks. They can't wait to go to war against Iran, for example.
Yeah, I think that's a good analysis and a frightening prospect. And it's impossible to know how to predict, you know, how he will respond, right? We know how he is domestically. We know how he is with enemies or people he views as enemies. It's hard to know if he really will use all of the military options available to him, to use a euphemism. but it certainly is possible, especially if he feels cornered in other ways.
Well, just in the last minute or so, Jennifer, returning to the work that you do, what's happened to the idea that the public expect? I mean, going back to the founders, of course, there was an argument about whether George Washington should be a king, and they resisted that idea. But the impulse has always been there that the head of state is sort of, you know, a kind of like royalty. Obviously, we don't have royalty. So our presidents are both our political leaders and our heads of state. And there's always been an expectation that the head of state behaves with a certain amount of decorum. Has that been lost in this Kardashian culture? What do you think?
I don't think it's been lost. I think it's not present in this president. He loves a parade, right? He loves the pageantry of things, but I don't think he likes to or does act with decorum. But I don't think that it's lost entirely. I think that there's a lot of people who are nostalgic now for the Obama administration and the fact that there wasn't a lot of controversy or embarrassment on the world stage. And I think that probably we'll be looking for leaders who, sort of possess that kind of decorum.
So you think that this is, I mean, his behavior in the UN was just deeply embarrassing, where he made those absurd remarks about how great he was and his greatest president accomplished more in 2 years than any other president in America's history. That was bad enough. But do you think this last outburst, they keep talking about, you know, how the Republican women are going to defect. Well, have we reached a point now where no women are going to vote for this guy?
Well, I think I've seen I've seen polls that show that there are actually fewer Republicans now than there were when Trump started running. So I think there's more independents now. People are leaving the party. There is a core of, I think, 30% to 40% of the American electorate who has continued to approve of him and his behavior. But there's a good chunk of the American electorate that doesn't. So I'm hopeful. We'll see.
Well, Jennifer Machia, I thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And again, I've been speaking with Jennifer Machia, who's a professor in the Department of Communications at Texas A&M University, where she teaches courses on political communication and presidential rhetoric, and a historian of American political discourse, especially discourses about citizenship, democracy, and the presidency. And she's the author of Founding Fictions and the co-editor of The Rhetoric of Heroic Expectations, Establishing the Obama Presidency. And she's finishing a third book about Donald Trump's presidential campaign and demagoguery. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back exploring both the constitutional authority of the President of the United States and the constitutional restraints imposed on his authority.